The Weekly Long Box is brought to you this week by Handy Holder. Do you have a tablet device? What if you were to accidentally drop it on the floor and break it? With Handy Holder, you would never have to worry about that again. Visit hand, the letter E, holder.com to learn more about the world's best universal tablet holder. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 33 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined, as always, by Todd. Todd, how are we doing on this, I guess, 4th of July holiday? It's so weird when it falls in the middle of the week.
It does. I'm doing pretty good. I'm very sore from lifting comic boxes, from organizing all my stuff, so I'm a mess.
Oh, that's right. Last week we spoke on the show that Todd was finally going to attempt to organize his books, and unfortunately, I think we found out that you're missing some things, so now it's going to cost you a whole bunch of money, huh?
Yes, and I've only done a third of my collection.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm like, okay, there's a missing issue here, and there's a missing issue there. Now, granted, I might end up finding them in other boxes that they just got stashed in, but hopefully, you know, I will. But if not, I'm going to be like, oh, I just can't stand having a gap somewhere that I now know about that I didn't know about before.
Well, I saw you mention you'd contacted J.M. DeMatteis on Twitter. I think I might be able to help you fill in that gap if something's missing there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, basically what I was telling him is I have all the issues, but it always confuses me on Heroed Squared, the book, the like which order they go in.
Because
some of them have different names and stuff like that. Basically, I if there's a trade, that's what I'm looking to get. It's just have the trade, sit them down, read them, and you're good to go.
Always, you know what, when there's situations like that with, like, weird miniseries, it doesn't so much happen with the big two, but a lot of times in an indie book, always look in the front on that, the publish date.
Right. That's what I do, but a lot of times, I should just put them in an order in the box and be done with it, but I don't know. But I'm also one of those guys who, if I really like a creator, I'll get the trades of what they do and put them up on the bookshelf because they look nice, too, so I'll have both. That's just the way I'll do it, maybe.
I know with the first trades of both Animal Man and Swamp Thing, I'm picking those up to give away as gifts to my buddy Brian, because when he was doing his order, because I help him do his order, he has no comic shops near him where he lives, so he just, his mail order, and I was really pushing him hard to pick up Animal Man and Swamp Thing way, way, way back, you know, we're talking a year ago, because it was, you know, I think July of last year, if you were doing your September orders.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really pushing him, like, man, you got to try Swamp Thing, you got to try Animal Man. He's like, I don't want to do it. So now that the trades are out, I know Animal Man's came out about a month ago, Swamp Thing's is coming out shortly. I'm getting those for him to give to him to force him to read those books.
Yeah, and don't even get me started on like stuff like JLI. I have that in the issues, in the hardcovers, and then in the soft covers, old and new, from back when they first came out. I'm ridiculous.
Well, enough about our collecting. Yes. We'll maybe get to some of that toward the end of the show. Let's get into news. We have got a news-heavy show. We've got a book-heavy show. As we creep closer and closer to San Diego, we have tons of things to talk about at San Diego. We have tons of stuff to talk about. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago here about the next DC team movie that was in discussions, and Marvel has announced what their next team movie is going to be, and it may surprise you if you already haven't seen. We have some information about a new digital publisher, a big digital sale that's currently going on for the 4th of July holiday, and tons and tons of stuff for the coming months leading us up to October, which I'm sure we have a lot to discuss there.
Lots of shakeups, lots of things going on. I'm completely confused and also can't wait for it.
Well, one thing that's not confusing is the books that we read last week. We have some stuff that we have both read before, some stuff that's making their first appearances on the list, and possibly an apology to some of our listeners from me.
Oh, did you do wrong again, Leonard?
I won't say that I did wrong, but I am a man who admits when I may have been mistaken.
Okay, I'm interested in this.
And we also have the books that we're most looking forward to this week, and a shipping snafu has fouled up what my original pick was, but we'll get into that.
Mm.
And then, of course, we'll have lots of discussion about what you, the listeners, and Todd and I have chosen for our book of the half year. I think this one might be easy for you, the listeners, and Todd to figure out for me. Todd, I have no idea what your book of the half year is.
Good. I don't think I know yet. Maybe I'll, you know, I gotta make an audible when we get there.
Maybe we'll have some convincing arguments during the course of the show.
Yes.
So, just as mentioning, in regards to the news in San Diego, DC, as we are just about a week or so away, I think preview night starts on a Thursday. Is that correct, or is preview night a Wednesday these days?
That I don't know anymore. I know it was used to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then they'd have preview night on Thursday, but they keep extending these cons, like, you know, an extra day. So I don't, there might be a Wednesday day now, or night.
Well, I know we're about a week away from the listening of this podcast, recording of this podcast from San Diego, and there's going to be tons of stuff between now and then, tons of stuff falling out from that. But one thing I wanted to mention was DC's ads that they have in conjunction with San Diego, where they're very much focusing on the creators. I've seen some of the images that they've put out for Jeff Lemire, for Scott Snyder, for Gail Simone, some of our favorites. And I know it's very reminiscent of what Image has been doing in their books all year. A lot of focus on the creators. But I'm very glad to see DC doing something like this. One of the big two. You know, sure, they got Batman, they got Superman. But to show that their creators mean just as much as those IPs do is pretty cool.
I think it is a good idea to put some, you know, faces to the names, because years ago, I don't know how many times I went to a con and somebody would be sitting at a table and, you know, didn't know if that was them or not. And it just humanizes some of the creators that you can meet. And, you know, in this day and age, like, you can talk to them on Twitter, you can talk to them on Facebook. And I think it's just cooler how easier it is to get in touch with your creator. Like we were talking, I talked to Jam DeMatteis, or however you say his name, we won't even get in the argument. It's just, he's one of my heroes, and you get to meet him at cons, and you can talk to him through social media. It's just really cool.
Right, and you had mentioned, like, just this past week, Cullen Bunn, who is taking over a ton of stuff at Marvel over the next couple of months, he had tweeted about a team that he's working on for one of the books, and that's really all he said, and I just tweeted to him, I hope Batroc's on the team, because he just wrote a real cool scene with Batroc in the Captain America Iron Man book that came out last week, and almost immediately he tweeted me back, saying, not this team, but when I get an opportunity to use Batroc, I most certainly will. And that made me really happy to see Batroc come back, because Batroc is an unsung villain. And again, it's just so cool in this day and age, and, you know, it's a different world for you and I and these kids and blah, blah, blah. We're old men and cantankerous geezers, but I'm very happy that the creators are so hands-on and so people-friendly in this day and age.
And that's like a double sword, though, with some people. But, you know, you got to give – I do give them credit for, like, you know, all the stuff that they do. They're really nice usually, and they you know, just like you said, talking to them is, you know, it's just a pick-me-up throughout the day.
I know there's a lot of creators that if they were more active on social media, they probably would be getting more work, but that's just the way it is in this day and age.
Yeah, I could see. You got to promote yourself.
Yes.
I was just talking with somebody about that the other day that, like, you know, that I do like the way it's mostly, like, independent guys promote their stuff. It's really cool with the social media and all that stuff. You can get your work out there and more people can see it. It's a lot easier than back in the day with, like, we talked about it before, like Kickstarter and all that. It's just so much easier for a creator to do new things other than going to the big two.
And which is good to see, because the more comics there are out there, the more opportunity for people to get work, and the more opportunity for there is to be good comics for us to read and enjoy. But one thing that is not good, of course, and that would be with San Diego Comic-Con, tickets are a very difficult commodity to come by. And every year they do crack down a little bit more and a little bit more on the security. And Todd pointed this out to me. I guess they're even cracking down more this year for the security on who is getting what tickets and matching things up. And you're going to have, like, valid photo ID. And, like, they're really, really being stringent with the security in regards to San Diego this year.
Yeah, they said that they're going to do, like, you know, random stops to make sure your ID matches your badge, I guess, because, like, they put your name on the badge or whatever. And people use their credit card, use that name and then sell it. You know, if your name is Joe Smith and you sell it to Steve Johnson, they could know. But I remember when I went, if somebody asked me if I wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary, like causing any trouble, and somebody stopped me and asked me for my ID, oh God, the bad things that would come out of my mouth. I just don't know how you can ask a perfect, you know, stranger who's not doing anything, like, show me your ID. like without a badge, you know, like a cop or something like that. It just boggles my mind. I understand they're trying to keep it so the scalpers don't scalp them and the tickets are high priced, but I don't know. That just seems kind of weird to me. Like, let me see your papers, kind of a thing.
You can get into a whole Homeland Security parallel with this, but yeah, you know, the tickets are going for like upwards to $200-$300 on like Craigslist and stuff. I know they've been pulling tickets off eBay. People have been trying to trade outright for the new iPads for tickets to any one of the days.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, like, I got nothing to hide. So go ahead, knock yourself out. Search through my man purse, look for anything. And, you know, I understand what you're saying. If it's just some schmuck in like a Deadpool t-shirt who comes up to me and he's wearing a badge just like I am, I might be a little less inclined to let him go through my bag. But if it's like looking like an official security person of the building or if something like that, I'd be like, no problem. I got nothing to hide. Go for it.
Yeah, and I'm not even one of those. I really don't care about, you know, your civil rights. I'm not going to get into these things. But like, I'm not a crusader. But I just find it funny that if you're not causing trouble, like they can, that they're going to come up and just ask you for your thing. Basically, that's what it comes down to for me. Like, I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, yeah, like, go get a cop. Get a cop, and then I'll show you my ID. But I'm a curmudgeon, like you said.
You are. I'm a curmudgeon, too, but I'm a curmudgeon with nothing to hide. Go for it. Go crazy. You're going to find nothing, and you're wasting your time, and while you're searching me, there's like 16 people going by that have fake IDs and scalp tickets. So,
well, my thing, it's not even the fake ID. It's like, if I was a you said, I think you're a security risk, maybe, but that's a whole different bag of donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Well, one of the other things I do want to mention is, we had mentioned up at the front of the show, is that there is a Marvel team movie in the works about a week or so ago. There's people who have a lot of time to look at these things, and they noticed that Marvel had purchased the licensee rights for a whole bunch of different avenues, specifically for the property of Guardians of the Galaxy, and nobody really knew why. Everyone speculated that there was going to be a big Guardians of the Galaxy book coming in the near future, but no, it is a Guardians of the Galaxy movie that is next in production for Marvel. Besides the Big Six animated feature that's coming from Marvel through Disney Animation, but the next live-action team that they're bringing to the silver screen is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy. We are very early in this. This is like pre-production, I would think. No other names have been attached other than I hope Rocket Raccoon doesn't look like a piece of junk CGI monster.
Or Groot. I'd like to see Groot. I think he could be a cool, like, Hulk-like character from the Avengers. You know, you just have that moment where, you know, all is lost, and then you just hear the scream, I am Groot, and just, you know, crashing through things with, you know, a little Rocket Raccoon on a branch shooting a machine gun, and I'd be in my glory. You don't need anybody else in that movie.
Yeah, we had talked about the Metal Men movie that was in the works from DC a couple weeks ago here on the show, and now with a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It was, you know, when Blade hit big a couple years ago and the first X-Men movie, Marvel sold out. And I always like to mention this. Marvel sold like 50 or 60 different properties that they had in their catalog to be made in the movies, and very few of them did. The two I always like to point at is the Iron Fist movie that has been in development since like 1999 that's never going to see the light of day.
I would love to see an Iron Fist movie, and I've always said that's probably one of the easiest, you know, characters to just mainstream, because it's a kung fu thing. You don't have, it's not like a crazy, like, things you have to know about the character's past. Goes to Kun Lun, learns the way of the Iron Fist, goes back out into the world. That's an easy movie.
Yeah. Hey, it's a kung fu guy with superpowers. Give me some money to make this movie.
There you go. See, that's why you should be marketing movies. One line, and you did it.
That's right.
I fumbled through it, mumbled through it. We have to team up. I'll be the brains, you be the voice.
Yeah, there you go. We just need to get, like, Davey Jr. to be the looks.
Ooh, put him in a suit with a briefcase. That would be fantastic.
That's right. But the other one that Marvel had sold the rights to some studio for was one called Mort the Dead Teenager. It was one of those, like, weird, like, comedy books that Marvel was putting out in the early 90s.
I remember the title. I never read it.
No, I don't think anyone ever read it, but it was just so funny to, like, see, like, here are the list of movies that Marvel is optioning to be made into the books that they're being optioned to make into movies, and on the list was Mort the Dead Teenager, and I'm just like, really? Like, that's how much of the bottom of the barrel we're scraping? That's how low we're getting?
Hey, I'm with them. Make a buck.
With that being said, I'm all for a slapstick movie.
a slapstick movie.
Yes.
I vaguely remember that character.
Slapstick, I guess, was... He was kind of like an ambush bug, Impossible Man type of character, where he was like a living cartoon.
Yes, I vaguely remember, I forget what book it was in, he cut off his own legs with a chainsaw, and then they grew back, because like he could do, like drop an anvil on him and he'd be fine, and he was just crazy, but I forget what book that was.
I know recently he was in Avengers The Initiative, but they didn't really do a ton with him.
They should have done more with him. He's a character with untapped potential.
I agree. He is definitely a character with untapped potential. Now, just kind of moving along here in the news, I do want to talk about digital stuff. There's a big digital sale going on right now through Comixology and also through Marvel's website for a ton of the Dan Slott Amazing Spider-Man stuff. They're picking up from the big time run, which started a couple months back, where it went from, you know, about three times a month to definitely bi-weekly, always by Dan Slott. There were some real cool stories during that run, and it ends up with the Spider Island stuff, which just finished. All the issues are 99 cents digitally, and you can get that full run of Spider Island, I think, for like $6, and it's really good to check out. Marvel, through their Comixology side, has a ton of free Amazing Spider-Man stuff available as well. They have Amazing Spider-Man number 1, they have Amazing Spider-Man number 6, the first appearance of the Lizard, and then they have the very first Brand New Day Dan Slott penned Amazing Spider-Man story, all up there for free. So if you're a digital person, go check those ones out, especially the Dan Slott issue.
Dan Slott's a good writer. I liked him from the She-Hulk days.
Yes. And one of the other big digital things that happened in the last couple of days was Chris Roberson, who we had talked about on the show. He was a creator with some controversy behind him, and he seems to have let it go behind him, listening and reading some of his recent interviews. He and his wife have started a new digital-only publishing company called Monkey Brain Comics. They were set to launch 5 reasonably priced books. I think 4 of them were 99 cents. Another one was $1.99, because I think that was like almost like 40 or 50 pages of a story. It was all set to go for the 4th of July, but the buzz was so strong on Monday that Comixology decided to push everything up 2 days early, so you can not only go to Comixology, you can go to monkeybraincomics.com and check those out, and there's a lot of really cool indie creators on there. Colleen Coover and Paul Tobin are doing a book together. I'm a big Paul Tobin fan. Colleen Coover's art is beautiful. Jay Torres, who did a lot of the Johnny DC stuff, and a ton of other creators. I'm all for, as we had mentioned before, more opportunities for creators to get creator-owned work out there and make a buck.
Sure. That, like I said, get it out there. And it's so easy now with the internet. Just go crazy. I'm with you.
Yes. And, you know, listening and reading some interviews with Roberson, he said that they're going to do their best to stick to the monthly schedule that everyone is so used to. But, you know, there's some stories that are like 8 pages that are going to be out in 8-page serialized things, kind of like what Mark Waid is doing with, what's the book now? Oh, I'm kicking myself that I'm forgetting the name of it. Insufferable. Also that DC is doing with their 99 cents daily things. I've been reading the Batman one that's been going on. They just started this past week a ongoing story written by B. Clay Moore with art by Ben Temple Smith, which is a really interesting story, and I think that's a 3-parter that they're doing there. So depending on the size of the story is depending how often you're going to see it. But I'm definitely going to check out the Paul Tobin, Colleen Coover book. I just haven't gotten a chance to yet because I am still catching up on my books from last week.
You're a slow reader. You got to speed things up.
I am. I'm a busy man. It's very difficult to read a comic book while changing a diaper. Lord knows I've tried.
You should have your wife read it to you while you're changing the diaper.
You know, a couple weeks ago, we were on our way home, and I didn't get a chance to read my books. Like, that's how far behind I was on getting the books. Oh, it was the Batman 10 from a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. with the big reveal of Thomas Wayne Jr., right?
Yep.
And I'd picked up my books that Wednesday. I went to go meet April and the man for dinner with our whole family and everything else like that. And we're getting home late, and I really wanted to read that issue. And I almost had her read it to me while I drove home.
That would
have been, I thought about it. I really thought about it.
That would have been awesome. Just showing you the pages while you're going down the highway.
Well, again, it's like our Walking Dead idea where I'm not going to look. I don't want to take my eyes off the road. I'm a safe driver. She's going to describe to me what's going on in the panels.
Oh, that's even better. That's fantastic. That's right. I might, you know what? If you do that, I might come for the ride.
Well, it would have to be me describing what's going on because I know my wife gets car sick when she tries to read in the car. Like, we'd be on trips and it'd be my turn to drive. And I'd be like, oh, why don't you read something? And she'd be like, I get car sick if I'm not, like, focusing on the road. I could read wherever I am. It's just I need the time. I need those free hands to read something.
You need to find some free time. You're going to go crazy one of these days.
One of these days, I've already gone and come back. It's not all it's cracked up to be.
I know what you're saying.
Well, I want to close out the news with a bunch of news stories. And just as I always like to mention, it always makes us look foolish when we record the show. And then at like 3 o'clock in the morning the next day, mm-hmm. Marvel decides to press release a huge story.
That happens to us all the time, too.
It happens more often than I would like. Mm-hmm. If Marvel and DC and Image could get on the same page with us, get us these press releases ahead of time.
I'm with you. I really think they should contact us, and we could be their official PR guys. It would be awesome.
That's right. Why bother with USA Today and Entertainment Weekly and all these other places? You know, come to the Weekly Long Box. No spin zone. Is that a thing?
I think it is.
I hope I just coined that.
I think they think you're the first, actually.
All right. Ugh. But anyway, the one thing that came out last week was that in an upcoming Amazing Spider-Man storyline, a storyline that is not coming until, September, that Spider-Man is going to get a sidekick, a young boy by the name of Alpha, and a bunch of the press releases like, now Spider-Man has his Robin. And to me, I say, was Spider-Man really needing a sidekick? Is that what's been wrong with the character for the last, 50 years?
You know what?
It's like, I can't get into this Spider-Man thing. He doesn't have a teen sidekick.
And you know what the funny thing is? The whole thing with Spider-Man was like Stan Lee, like they told him you can't have a teenage hero. It won't work. So he's like, no, we'll do one. You can't do a teenage hero with a mask. So all this stuff that they were trying to do, they're doing again with this kid. And I don't know. I'm with you. I think if people associate with Spider-Man, they don't need a young, hip, you know, like kid going around with him. And it would be better if they made him a hipster. That would be really cool. Alpha was cool before it was cool.
Oh, man. Don't get me started. So it's not so much that it's the character's name is Alpha or so much that Spider-Man's getting a sidekick. We're press releasing to like places like Fox News storylines that aren't going to happen for another 3 months. Essentially making people, if you weren't reading Spider-Man right now, let's just say you weren't, okay? There's a Spider-Man movie that came out this week. The midnight showing was just a day or two ago. It did what those movies usually do. Like, I think it did like 7.5 million on its opening night, which is the same as like Iron Man 2 and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm.
It's tracking pretty good to do some good money. If instead of press releasing a story that's not going to be out for another 3 months, why not press release that right now in your comic book store, you could read a story where Spider-Man takes on the Lizard, you know, the villain in the movie that's going on right now.
I'm with you. Or even, you know, maybe you want to promote that Spider-Man is meeting Spider-Man in a book, you know, like Ultimate Spider-Man and regular Spider-Man.
Well, and see, that's funny that you mentioned that. They actually did press release that 3 months ago.
But you see, you got to get the word of mouth so people will go buy the book in 3 months. They won't forget.
Right. And see, that's my problem. My problem is twofold. One, you're not getting people to go to the store right now. You're entrusting that people are going to remember this press release 2-3 months down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, the hardcore comic book fans are going to, but if you're trying to expand your readership, you need to get them in the store today, not tell them, hey, go to the store in 2 or 3 months, because in 2 or 3 months, the next, like, Halo game or the next, like, Grand Theft Auto is going to come out, and they're going to forget about it.
Right. And I'm with you, and if you're trying to expand your market, all it does, people forget about it, but with your regular people, you tick them off that collect, because it's like, you know what, maybe if I had, you know, read that in a book, like when I got there, it would have been a nice surprise. Now it's just everything is ruined, you know, months in advance. And I was even like playing around with this on Twitter the other day. I said, do you think Thunderbolts 1 would have happened, like the 1 year ago, that would have happened in this day and age? No, it wouldn't. That wouldn't have lasted 8 seconds. That wouldn't have lasted till some retailer got the, you know, the news and boom. Read Thunderbolts. It's really a supervillain team read by, you know, Baron Zemo. And like, no, you just can't, and you can't get away from it. It's become so prevalent. Go ahead, sorry.
Here's where I'm going to agree to disagree with you on that one. Yes, it would have been difficult if, you know, a story that came out in 1997, in 1997's world, if something like that was tried to be done today. But the problem is not the retailer who gets the preview copy and, like, puts it out online or something.
Right.
It's the companies themselves. DC is guilty of this as well. Just in the last couple of days, DC has showed their hand on the next big Batman story starting in October with the Joker and the big Green Lantern crossover coming in October.
Right.
And again, this kind of, like, you know, takes the steam or the heat away of what's going on in the current books, because it's like, okay, well, I know Batman's going to be okay, you know, because he's got this next big storyline coming up, you know? The whole thing is a cliffhanger. Is he going to survive the fight with Thomas Wayne Jr.? Well, yes, he is, because in 3 months, he's going to fight the Joker.
Yeah.
Now, do I know he's going to fight somebody in 3 months? Probably. Batman's not going to go away. But don't tell me.
See, that I disagree with you about. I was wrong about the retailer that's doing it. It's the companies. But come on, we really know Batman's not going anywhere. I mean, like, that's not the problem that bothers me. It's the fact that would I have, like, you know, preferred the last page be the reveal of the character's back instead of knowing about it when I get to that issue before I even open it? Like, there's,
you right, know, might I'm be with a surprise. You. I'm with you.
But on the whole thing that they're, you know, announcing, like, you know, solicitations, as long as I know there's going to be another Batman issue, I know he's not dying. And we've talked about this before. Even if he's dead, give me 8 months and he's coming back. So that's nothing. But I would like to be occasionally surprised in a book.
Right. And then the other thing that I wanted to close things out with this, you know, just this last 24 hours, the news has been finally starting to be made official by Marvel with the not relaunch that they're doing come October, where we're starting to see some official names on those creative teams. And we're starting to see that there's going to be a slew of new number ones that are going to be trickled out from October to February. Over the course of, I think, 22 weeks, they said, where it's going to be like a new number one every week. And, you know, they're very big in saying it's not the same thing that DC did. You know, the continuity is going to be the same. A lot of people are getting new number ones and new motivations and new costumes and a lot of the same things that happened in the DC New 52. But it's not the same thing. And it's not a reaction to what happened.
But are they saying it's that these... the old continuity doesn't matter anymore? Not that it doesn't matter, well, isn't, you know, these are restarts of the character? Because I'm a little confused on it.
Well, I don't think that it's restarts of the character.
Okay.
But when I see, like, stuff in Entertainment Weekly that Jean Grey is coming back, but it's a Jean Grey from the original X-Men from the 60s who has time-traveled to our time.
Ooh.
And is upset with what the world has become.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the storyline pitch for Bendis's X-Men book.
Okay.
And, like, it's an interesting pitch, but, like, how long is that going to last for?
I have no idea.
My
bigger problem with it is the number ones. Because I think DC, you know, they rebooted the continuity, so they're going to stick with, unless a new book comes out, I don't see them restarting number ones because they want to get their foothold with these comics for a while. But Marvel and their number ones, been there, done that. X-Factor is at like 230 some, maybe almost 240. You're not telling me that when X-Factor gets to what would have been the 250th issue, we're not going back? Like, I don't care. I'm cool with new storylines, new ideas, new costumes, whatever. But don't try to sell me on the number ones, because you've been doing this for years, and that's the biggest problem I have with all this.
And see, for me, as I mentioned before, we just hit the halfway mark of Avengers vs. X-Men,
mm-hmm.
which this whole big thing is supposed to spin out of.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that, you know, very well could have died or perished or completely changed based on Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah.
But there they are, all front and center in that publicity piece that Quesada drew that's going to be in Entertainment Weekly this week. You know, so I know that Cyclops is going to be okay. He's just going to get a costume that looks really dumb. And I know, you know, Nick Fury's son is going to be the new Nick Fury. And I know Captain America is going to be come out of this unscathed. And I know Spider-Man's going to be unscathed. And Wolverine's going to be unscathed. And did I know these people were going to be unscathed? Probably. But you know what? I would like to have seen it in the book, not 4 months early in an issue of Entertainment Weekly.
I agree with you with that, but how do you know it's Steve Rogers in the costume? They've never had another Captain America in there. Might be a different one. I'm with you.
Uh-huh.
But I would be actually kind of cool if they threw us a curveball and they were like, you know, somebody in here is dead and somebody else has taken their place. Like somebody who hasn't had it done to them like 50 times, though.
Well, I'm sure they'll tell us what the curveball is next week at San Diego.
Oh, that
is
true.
And then we'll be ready for the curveball come October.
You know what? We should just stop listening to the news anywhere. No, I'm just.
But it's so difficult to avoid. You know, we do a show about the comics industry, so we have to report on the news.
I know, and that's the thing. It's just I'm going to ask you. I've asked you before, and I'm going to ask you again, Leonard. When did comics become a business?
I think it was mid 1962 is when it became an official business.
We're going to have to hammer down the exact date so we could celebrate That's it right. each year.
Well, enough about the news, and I apologize, everyone, for our rant. It's just that it's just been so much coming out over the last couple of days that, like, I just had it up to I had my fill of it, I guess you could say.
I'm with you. I'm with you, brother.
Yes. So let's talk about the book that we read last week. Todd, I'm going to leave it up to you. Where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with All-Star Western.
All right. All-Star Western number 10. I read this as well. I really like this. I like where this character, this book is going. I wasn't too keen on the Batlash backup. The backup's second features are hit or miss for me, but this book is very strong.
I disagree with you on the backup. This is one of my favorite backups so far. It looked beautiful, and I thought it's fun. I like Batlash as a character. I think he's a different Western character. But the main book, man, this might be my favorite issue of it so far. This felt like every like spaghetti Western or Clint Eastwood Western that I have, the one-liners and just really cool in the characters. The interaction between Tallulah Black and Arkham, I think, is some of the finest stuff that I've seen, because she's just she is the perfect match for Jonah Hex, like, as a female. She's just awesome.
And we're starting to see some of more problems with Arkham's mom there.
Yes, Arkham's mom, who, from what I remember, is following. I'm not going to give away spoilers. Following the story of Arkham pre, like the reboot. Some things, you know, there's stories about him creating Arkham Asylum and his mother that I remember from certain books. So I'm hoping we go there. Maybe there's a couple of twists with it, but that could be really creepy. And a thing people don't know about this book, because it's not on the cover, is that it's a Court of Owls story with everything that's going on. The actual, like, Court of Owls and the masks is in it, and I thought that was just really cool.
I know the Court of Owls stuff was in last month's issue as well, and that was, like, the big month where everything was crossing over with it, but it was good to see the Court of Owls stuff still hanging around here in this issue, you know, in this story that takes place in the in the past. But I do have a question for you, Todd, being the more Jonah Hex aficionado than I am a newbie to this Jonah Hex stuff.
Yes.
Is Tallulah Black always been, like, tied to Jonah?
Only,
or is this kind of like a new wrinkle to the characters?
No, this is a newer wrinkle in the last 70-issue run by Jimmy Palmiotti and Gray with various artists. Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray created this character.
Okay.
So everything that you're seeing, like hearing about her origin in this, is the origin from the last run of books. Even I've, like, you know, listened to Jimmy or read Jimmy Palmiotti on Twitter say that went to 70. So in his mind, this issue is issue 80 of the old Jonah Hex run. So,
right.
But yeah, she's been around.
Well, speaking of books that take place in the past, one of the books that I want to talk about from last week would be American Vampire number 28. It's always a book I talk about, but this is a great jumping on point. They do a really good job of filling you in on the main characters and what the storyline is. And the pitch that I can give you for the storyline is it takes place in the early 50s, and they do a parallel to the McCarthy hearings with people being accused of being communists.
Mm-hmm.
As a cover for vampires attempting to infiltrate Hollywood.
That's an interesting premise.
Yes. So that's essentially what the beginning of this storyline is in American Vampire. And if you like Scott Snyder on the Batman and the Swamp Thing, this is a great place to jump on with American Vampire. And Raphael Albuquerque's art is back, and it is beautiful. And there is tons of good stuff for people that have been on this book since the very beginning, like myself, or jumping right on. They do a very good job of catching you up to speed on who these characters are, what their motivation is. And it's a very fast-paced read for a Vertigo book. Sometimes a Vertigo book can be a little heady at times, but this one is not. This one gets right down to it.
I mean, I don't know why. I guess because I'm an idiot sometimes. I was reading the issues of American Vampire. I don't know. I got about 8 in, and then for some reason I stopped. I don't know why, but this was a book that I'd like to get back in, at least pick up the trades or something and read up to this point and start now, because if you tell me it's a good jumping on point. The only problem I had is no Jordy Brunet.
No. When April decided to get back into books, she had some free time with the baby and everything. Mm-hmm. I just skipped those issues.
Why?
I didn't even give them to her. I'm like, here's what happens in those issues. Don't worry about it.
This is all the news you need. Keep going.
Yes, I summed up those three issues in like 5 words. I'm like, the art stunk. You don't want to read it.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I want to try. Scott Snyder's like just hitting on all cylinders lately. So another book by him is never a bad thing.
Yes. So what would you like to talk about next, sir?
JLA Dark or Justice League Dark. I always call these books JLA or Justice League JLA, but because that's my old brain working. But Justice League Dark this month by Jeff Lemire and Mikkel. I'm going to say Yannin. Because it's a J, I don't know, maybe. But this book has been so much fun since Lemire has come on. Like I said before, it was all over the place with the two different writers, and even the two different writers didn't seem to know what they want. But Lemire does probably the best Constantine I've seen in a long, long time. I love my Constantine chain smoking and being a jerk, and I get that almost every page in this issue.
Right, and I read this as well, and this, you know, it's called Justice League Dark in title, but this is just essentially John Constantine in the DC universe. That's essentially what it is. Not to give the other characters in the book short shrift, but because they all get their opportunity to shine, but this is John Constantine's book, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree. And some of the stuff he does, the way he manipulates them all is just great. And and the side characters, like you said, they don't, you know, it's John's book as far as we're concerned. But I'm really enjoying like Dr. Mist. I didn't think that I was going to like that character when they brought him. I thought he might have been stupid, but he's a character I like. I like Black Orchid, Zatanna. It's just there's nothing wrong I can find wrong with this book. And the villain, you know, it just is doing cool things, and it surprised me a couple times. And this is what I look for in a book: not predictable, interesting, fun characters that I like, even though they're very bad people sometimes. I can't recommend Justice League Dark enough.
Right, and I do want to say that I'm surprised they kind of, and they didn't really pay it off so much, but that they kind of wrapped up that Constantine was lying to Zatanna mm-hmm. so quickly. I figured we would have got strung along a little bit longer on that one, but
I agree with you until he did the whole thing as why whenever he wants them to come back to the group, mm-hmm. they'll come back. So he doesn't need to dangle the hat in front of her anymore. So I think that's right. Really cool. And it just shows what he does, just makes him, like, not only that did he lie, he does the thing that makes them come back whenever he wants, and then he tells her on top of it, like, the hat was a lie and I did this. It just makes him so awful. It's awesome.
So the last book that I want to talk about that I read from last week, the book I was most looking forward to was Fatale number 6, the beginning of a new storyline from Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker, and it was really good. It's a little bit more forward in the storytelling. Another character is being influenced by the female lead of the book, which I think is going to be the connecting point to all these stories as they go on. And I'd gotten some grief on Twitter from some of our listeners that I did not choose Batman Inc. number 2 as my pick. Even some folks who said that I should have picked Superman Adventures number 2, which was also a fun book. The Tiny Titans were back in that. Speaking of which, as a side note, tangent, any of our listeners going to San Diego, there's still a chance for you to get in touch with me so that you can pick me up the Tiny Titans action figure pack. It's only $20. I will make it more than worth your while if you are nice enough to get in touch with me and pick that up for me. We can talk after the show. Back onto the subject. While Fatale number 6 was really good, Batman Inc. number 2 was a lot better. So I should have picked that. I have egg on my face. That should have been the book that I picked from last week. It is essentially just a Talia story of everything that she has gone through since from her conception to now, as how she has gotten to the point of being in charge of Leviathan, the group that is trying to bring down Bruce and get back her son Damian. Chris Burnham's art is great. If you're one of those people that hate Grant Morrison for whatever reason, this was probably the least Grant Morrison thing that he has written in a long time. If that is a way to entice you to read the book, if some reason you have a hang-up on Grant Morrison, and there are very few of you, it still feels like a Grant Morrison book, but it's not as Grant Morrison-y to scare people away.
That's the kind of explanation that makes me want to read a Grant Morrison book. No, you almost got me. And I'm not trying to be negative here. Like, I'll read it, and it'll probably be awesome. I'm not going to lie, because Grant Morrison has wowed me. But then what's going to happen is I'm going to buy three, right? And there's going to be, like, time-traveling monkeys who speak Latin, and that's going to be the whole book. And I'm going to go, okay, you got me. And you got my next $3.99. So maybe I'll borrow that off of somebody. But if you like Grant Morrison, go please support him and go get his books.
All right, I will say this. I have the issue right here in front of me. I think, no, it's already been passed up through the chain.
Oh.
I think it's only $2.99.
Okay, $2.99. Fair enough.
First of all, and second of all, you know, while the issue one of the return of the book did have the bat cow in it,
okay,
which did convince Damian to be a vegetarian, and the bat cow has been in Tiny Titans for years now, but we're not going to say that Grant Morrison plagiarized from Balthazar and Franco. I will read issue 3 and I will tell you if there were Latin-speaking monkeys from a backwards dimension that are taking on Batman in that issue. And if there is not, then I will say with all good confidence, Todd, you can pick up issue 3 of Batman Inc.
You know what? I might take you up on this deal as my Grant Morrison screener.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
That's what you could be to me, is my Grant Morrison screener. You'll go, Todd, this issue wasn't too out there. You can read it. And then the next one, Todd, don't even pick it up. Don't even touch it with your hands because it'll burn. And that's the way we'll do this. Sound like a deal?
And yes, that is exactly what we will do. So the last book from last week is up to you, Todd. This is a book that I did not read. We have no crossover on this one, so the floor is yours.
This one is IDW's Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who Simulation Crossover, issue number 2. The two Tiptons, Lee and Woodward, three writers on the book, because this, like I said before, these characters need three writers because they're so awesome. The first one was a story, as I said, told from, like, the Doctor's vantage point, and then at the end they meet the Star Trek Next Generation crew. This is the exact same thing, but from the other side. And as much as the first one felt like a Doctor Who story, I have to give them credit. This one felt like a Next Generation story. I'm a big fan of the Next Generation run, and they're two different flavors, but they work well together at the end. And I'm just having so much fun with this. This is one of those little fanboy a dream come true books, and it now it's just a matter of which J.K. Woodward page I get, because I'm looking at issue 3, and Kirk, it looks like they're going to time travel a little bit, and Kirk, Spock, and the fourth Doctor is going to be in there, and I'm like, I don't know. Just everything about this book I love, and it makes me happy, and isn't that what reading comics is about?
No, what reading comics is about is to try to figure out how this bridges the continuity between the two TV shows and getting mad when it doesn't make sense in your head.
Ah, there's an actually cool point in there. There's a cool point in there where the Doctor's on the bridge of the Enterprise, and I mean, I know you said you didn't watch any Star Trek or much Star Trek.
I know, you know, I think the original Star Trek series from the 60s is almost ingrained in everyone our age's pop culture subconscious. Mm-hmm. And I know the first, like, 5 or 6 movies, but Next Generation, like, I know the guys from sight. Like, I know, like, oh, that's Geordi, and that's, you know, Picard, and that's Wesley Crusher. Like, that's about it.
Well, there is, like, a cool moment where they're talking, and the Doctor's talking with Picard, and he's like, and Worf walks in, and they're like, he's like, oh, and a Klingon. And he's like, yeah, he's a Klingon. And he's like, and that shouldn't be right, because up until he walked in the door, I had never heard of a Klingon or never seen one, and I've been to almost every planet in the universe. Something's not right here. And it was just one of those cool little moments as a fan. I'm like, oh, they're going to actually try to explain this. So this could be really, really cool. And as they're going, like, they see the villains team up at the end, and it's just this cool shot of the two different types of ships together. And the Doctor Who says to the captain, he's like, we shouldn't be here. And he's like, I think you're right. And I'm like, yes, you shouldn't be together, but it's awesome, and keep going. So I don't know if I sound giddy when I'm, but I hope I do.
I do sense the joy in your voice in talking about and reading this book. Mm-hmm. This should be the book, just like Walking Dead is for me, the one where I'll do the iTunes reviews, where it's just me describing the panels as they happen. This should be the one for you, where you just describe what's going on. Oh, man, this is really awesome. The Star Trek guys and Doctor Who are doing stuff. It's awesome. Oh, man, they're even doing more awesome stuff in this next panel.
I think I have to use the mute button. I'm going to be a while.
All right, no problem. So while Todd is taking care of that, we're going to move on to the books that we're most looking forward to coming out this week. And I do want to have the tear roll down my cheek here. Last week was a very rough week for me. I didn't get a lot of sleep, and I was having very difficult times putting together coherent thoughts and conveying those in a way with words in my mouth. And it didn't dawn on me until like almost the end of the day on Wednesday that there would be no comics this Wednesday, because this Wednesday is the 4th of July, which is a national holiday, and most everything is closed on that day, including our local comic book shop. And I was doing the math in my head, like the way that like you would do on an abacus to figure out like, well, wait, the comics ship on a Tuesday, and then it's Wednesday. How come I can't get my comics until Thursday? I was very confused by the whole process. So we are not getting our comics until Thursday here. And even further to rub the salt in that wound, apparently, due to a printing error, the book that I was actually most looking forward to coming out this week, which is like the second time in like 3 weeks this has happened, that there's been some sort of like beyond the realm of control of our local retailer who is awesome, that a book that I was most looking forward to did not come in. But this one was a more public knowing was not coming in, and that is Swamp Thing number 10. Apparently there was a printing issue or something of that ilk where it will not be arriving in stores this week, so the book I am most looking forward to this week is going to be Animal Man number 10, which is the continuation of the storyline of the Rot and the Red fighting, and it has been awesome, and as much as I like Swamp Thing, I like Animal Man just as much.
Actually, this is the book that I'm going to pick also this week, for next week. This is one of those weeks that I'm looking at it, and that's really the only thing that like jumps out me that I want to have. And it would probably be that even if Swamp Thing was coming out this week. It's just, I like Animal Man a little more than Swamp Thing every month, and I don't know why, other than last month, Swamp Thing was really, really good. But to throw another curveball into your whole abacus thing, the books came on Monday.
Oh,
and I don't understand why the Pope of Comics didn't give special dispensation to put them out on Tuesday, because people would go into the shop. They want stuff to read on their day off.
I do.
This upsets me greatly. I don't understand why, if they can get them there on Monday, that we can't. Just this one time. I'm not talking about every other time. You know, Wednesday is New Comic Day. From, you know, it should be decreed till the end of time now, unless a holiday falls on Wednesday.
And here we are with a holiday falling on a Wednesday. And the other thing that I would be remiss in mentioning is, I know that you said there wasn't a ton of stuff coming out. And, you know, the first week of the month always ends up being a light week for the two of us. And that second and third weeks always become, like, the meatiest weeks. And then with Swamp Thing being moved back to next week, makes it even just that much bigger. But two other notables that are coming out this week would be the Batman Earth 1 graphic novel, written by Geoff Johns with art by Gary Frank, which I'm sure will be a beautiful read. Geoff Johns on Batman could be hit or miss. I love me some Geoff Johns, but I don't think he has ever written a Batman Solar story. Luckily, it is out of the current universes, so it won't be hopefully too bogged down in the previous continuity. It'll kind of set its own path. The other thing that I wanted to mention coming out this week would be Earth 2 number 3, which is going to kind of be more of a full first appearance and costume of Alan Scott as the Green Lantern. And also DC has their second and third printings of issues 1 and 2 shipping this week as well. So if you missed out on issues 1 and 2 and you really need to get issue 3, your local retailer should have all three copies in your hands this week. And if you're one of those digital folks, you can just pick them up at your leisure digitally, and I think issue 1 will probably be at a reduced price as it has been out longer than 6 weeks, which is DC's digital scheme that they have.
And I'm interested in that too, because I have no idea what Alan Scott's going to look like. I haven't, yes. I honestly haven't looked for any, you know, pictures or anything like that. So this is, it's going to be new to me when I open it up.
Yes, there's been the cover that we've seen where he's kind of engulfed in flames and you really can't get a good look at what his costume looks like, which I'm cool with. I want to have that big reveal happen in the book, as we've talked about before. Let's have those reveals happen in the books, not in press releases to the New York Post, mm-hmm. folks.
And I haven't even seen the fire cover yet.
Oh, really?
No, I just honestly haven't seen anything for it. I keep my head down.
Yes. You are the ostrich of the show. Your head is in the sand at all times.
Yes, it is.
All right, so that wraps up the news. That wraps up books that we talked about for this week that we're most looking forward to, books that we read from last week. So now it is time to dive into the Twitter question from last week, which was, what is you, the listeners, book of the half year? We are exactly 6 months into the year, and we have had a ton of stuff come out over that time frame. And, of course, you can follow along with us and interact with us on Twitter for the show, which is Weekly Long Box. Todd is at Roker the Joker. That's R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. And I am L.F. Chikarison. L-F-C-H-I-K-A-R-S-O-N. And I usually do try to have that tweeted out from the main account, Weekly Long Box, on Fridays when people do their Friday follow shenanigans. And we did get quite the interesting mixed bags, some surprises, but then some stuff that was not surprising at all from our listeners. And I say that in a good way, because it's books that I agree with that are really good books.
That's what, you know, good books rise to the top.
Yes. Some of the surprises to me were ATD, who is the official ATD. I didn't know there were other ATD imposters out there. He had mentioned the most recent Deadpool arc where Deadpool dies, and I admit I'm a little off Deadpool these days. I still hold those Joe Kelly books near and dear to my heart. Mike Schaefer, longtime listener of the show, that's his Twitter handle as well, mentioned Rebel Blood from Image, which I'll be honest with you, is a book that is completely off my radar.
Never heard of it either.
Yeah. Another longtime listener, John Seiler, he had mentioned iVampire, which I know is a book that you have touted quite a bit.
I try to push that as hard as I can.
He had chose that as his book of the half year, and I know when that one comes out in the trade, I think the trade of that one's coming out September or October. I'm definitely going to be trying to get my mitts on that one. CM Towns, a new listener, that's his Twitter handle as well, mentioned Empowered number 7, the Adam Warren penned and drawn book. And if that's not if that's a book you've never seen before, that's definitely one to check out. That is one that I do get every time that it comes out, and this one was a great one. Very cheesecakey, sometimes a little bit of a guilty pleasure, but the book over the last two trades has gotten to be a little bit more serious, but there's still enough cheesecake in there if that's your cup of tea. And then, of course, we had some of the, you know, some of the books that, not surprising, you know, Hey Rock, and again, I'm completely butchering that, but his Twitter handle is H-Y-E-R-O-C, mentioned Aquaman as his book of the half year, and I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with that. Vance Gatlin at Ronin's Journey on the Twitter machine mentioned Avengers vs. X-Men, and it has been hit or miss for me, but mostly hit. I'd say so far 4 out of 6 for me, which is still pretty good. J.K. Renfro, a man who is a man after my own heart, being a comic book fan, a father, and a wrestling fan, he chose Moan and Glories, which I just recently got the third trade of that. I can't wait to dive in. And we had Vegas Margate mention Irredeemable, among other people mentioning other books. So, Todd, would you like me to go first with my book of the half year, or would you like to guess, or can I guess what yours could be?
I'll guess what you. I'll let you go first, but I'll guess what yours is, and I have it narrowed down to maybe two.
All right.
But I'm going to take a swing and say Walking Dead.
Oh, so close!
All right,
so close.
I'm going to take another swing. Daredevil.
You would be correct.
Okay.
Kevin Hellions, Team Hellions on Twitter, he had mentioned Daredevil was his book of the half year, and I would be hard-pressed to disagree with him. And I will be honest with you, I was between Walking Dead and Daredevil myself, but I think at this point in the books, Daredevil is a easier book to get onto, as evident of me getting my Daredevil hooks into you to read that book.
And Daredevil is a very good book, I have to admit. You brought me around. I don't know, but I don't know if it's so much you as Mark Waid's writing. So I'm going to give him a little bit of the credit.
You know what? I say the credit should go 51% me, 49% Mark Waid.
How about 51% you, 48%
right.
Mark Waid, 1% me for giving in and trying.
Okay.
That's all I want is 1%.
And all those numbers are subject to about a 3% margin of error.
Yes, plus or minus.
No, and again, Daredevil to me is probably the perfect comic book right now, perfect superhero book from any of the publishers. And there's tons of good stuff out there. It's not mired down in any sort of the big crossovers that are going on. You don't need to know tons and tons of backstory about Daredevil. They cover it all in the first issue. I think the first trade and hardcover are out, and the second hardcover is coming out shortly. And again, of course, as always, you can get this stuff digitally. And any retailer worth his salt should have Daredevil back issues of Mark Waid in perpetuity on his shelf.
They shouldn't, because he hates floppy comics.
Oh, that's right. Mark Waid does hate physical comics.
Yes.
That is correct. No, that's just crazy talk. Remember when that was a thing earlier this year? Yeah. Mark Waid hates print comics?
Yes, I do. How people overreact, man. Just, it's ridiculous.
All right. Now, let me see if I can guess what your book of the half year is.
Okay, you go for it.
Could it be... It's not the current Doctor Who... Doctor Who!
Yes.
Star Trek The Next Generation thing that's going on. But isn't there another Doctor Who book that comes out on a monthly basis?
There is, but that's not it.
All right, that's what my pick is for you, because you're a Doctor Who fanatic. What is your book of the half year, sir?
I might be cheating because it didn't come out for the full 6 months. Is that okay?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, again, if you know, I think Daredevil started in August of last year, but we did get a good chunk of issues over the last 6 months.
Right.
So you know,
right? That's my thing. Mine didn't start. It hasn't been around for the full 6 months. Saga. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and here's why, because. I read his Ex Machina lately, and it blew me away, and I didn't know what we would get from Saga, but in the 4 months that he's done issue and Fiona Staples has drawn, I've been wowed. He's one-upped it every month. He's wowed me more and more, and she's wowed me more and more every month, and I did not think this book was going to be as great as it is, as early as it is, and I think we're looking at a future classic right now, and it's just so fun to be like on the ground floor of something like that, and hopefully can sustain what it's doing for me right now.
And you know what, I'd be hard pressed to disagree with you on that one. Saga's a great book, you know, and but it just, for me, you know, Daredevil and Walking Dead were really hitting out, but I would say Saga would be my number three book of the year, half year. They still have plenty of time to maybe become the book of the year. And I did see that you tweeted the other day that you picked up some Brian K. Vaughan Swamp Thing issues.
Yes, he did. Ooh. After the Morrison run, well, you know, the John Todleben, Alan Moore run, goes into Veach, goes into Nancy Collins, all that stuff. At the end, when it ends, a few years later, Brian K. Vaughan did 20 issues where Tefe was Swamp Thing.
And oh, that's right. That's right. I thought, why did I think that got canceled quicker than 20 issues?
I don't know. Dave always told me it was really good because he was a big Swamp Thing fan. He read it. The art isn't that great. It's the guy who's the guy doing Spider-Man right now?
Oh, geez. There's so many different people doing
Calicola or something like that.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about at least?
No, I don't.
He just did the Lizard issue. But
okay. I know who you mean. I didn't like the art in the Lizard issue.
But he's way better now. I like him. He reminds me of a watered down back then Mark Hempel from the Kindly Ones, Sandman.
Okay.
But I just flipped through it. But it still looks pretty good. But like I said, it's a Brian K. Vaughan thing. It came into the shop. He got like all the Swamp Thing. Somebody had all the Swamp Thing runs in a collection. And he was, you know, getting ready to put them on eBay and doing stuff with them. And I'm like, I'll take the Vaughan run. After reading Ex Machina and reading Saga now and Why the Last Man, these came in. I'll take all 20 issues. And he's like, okay, you know, keeps me from, you know, having to pay eBay fees and stuff like that. And I'm probably tomorrow going to sit down and try and crank through them.
Well, did you ever read Runaways? Brian K. Vaughan's Runaways?
No. And I think this was coming out around that time, he was telling me. Like, I think it was like the year 2000 when this was coming out.
When you're finished up with that Swamp Thing run, we might need to do just a swap for the weekend, maybe. I'll bring you those Runaway issues, and you let me borrow those Swamp Thing issues, and I'll try to non-mud and cookie them up the best I can.
That sounds like a deal, because he's quickly, I mean, he's good going up there with the great on my list.
Mm-hmm. And he had some really good Batman stuff when he was on that book for a little bit. I just picked up a Vertigo trade that he did of this book called Dead Enders that I never even heard of, but it's like, oh, it's Brian K. Vaughan early work. I'm sure it's perfectly acceptable, if not bordering on pretty awesome.
Right. I'm with you. His name alone will bring me to the table.
Yep, and that's what sold me on Saga. Like, I didn't want to know anything about it. He announced it last year at San Diego. He said, I'm doing a book, and the pitch was, I think, like, Star Wars meets Game of Thrones. And I'm like, I know one of those two things, and that's all I need to know. Brian K. Vaughan's name, I'm buying the book.
You know what pitched me on it? I walked in the shop one day, and there was the Saga poster on the back wall, and it said, buy Brian K. Vaughan. And I was like, oh, okay. I put that on my pull list. Done and done. I just, there looks like a little helicopter and some space people, whatever.
Well, I do thank you all listeners for contributing to letting us know what your book of the half year was. And our question for next week ties into some of the stuff that we were talking about earlier in the news. Todd had mentioned the art of surprise in comic books. Things kind of get telegraphed months in advance, and specifically mentioned Thunderbolts. I would like to know, you, the listeners, what your favorite surprise shocking moment in all of comics was.
Ooh.
Yes. The one thing that kind of just threw you the curveball, came out of left field, you never saw coming, wasn't spoiled in the solicitations, wasn't given away months in advance in Wizard. What was the really thing that knocked your socks off when you saw it in comics?
I just figured mine out, and I could feel the goosebumps washing over my body.
I know mine. It's probably something I've mentioned on the show before, but I might do some digging to see if there's something else that might replace it, only because I don't like to repeat myself on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be able to figure out what it might be if you've sat around and thought about it, but there might be a couple other things, too, because there's been some really, oh my God, cool moments in comics that I can think of, all right off the top of my head, without digging.
Yes, so what is your biggest surprise, shocking moment in all of comics? Tweet us at Weekly Longbox with the hashtag GrizzWLQ, or just tweet us in general. I'll track them down somehow, and we will join you all next week right here with discussion on that, books from last week, books for the coming week, news, and all the San Diego pre-fallout that's fit to talk about right here in the Weekly Longbox. For Todd, I'm Leonard, and we will catch you all next week.